Let's go spirit hunting. I'm Susie Carrick, Chief Taster and Tailspinner from NZ Spirit Guide, and you're listening to Tales from the Top Shelf, where we meet the makers, explore the distilleries, and uncover the people, passions, and the stories behind New Zealand's world-class spirits. Kia ora and welcome to Tales from the Top Shelf, where we share the stories behind New Zealand's distilleries, the people who are bringing them to life, and the spirits that have earned a place on our top shelf. I'm Susie Carrick from the NZ Spirit Guide, and this week we're heading to the very bottom of the South Island, to Bluff. It's a town that's long been known for its oysters, fishing heritage, and rugged coastline. But in recent years, it's become home to one of New Zealand's most awarded gins. I still remember when Bluff Gin first appeared on the market. The stunning bottle landed on the scene and immediately stood out from everything else on the shelf. Then before long, it wasn't just turning heads for its design, it went on to win Best in Show at the Australian Gin Awards, effectively becoming Australia's best gin. Just after launching, putting this little distillery from the deep south firmly on the international map. Joining me today is co-founder and head distiller, Chris Fraser. Chris, welcome to Tales from the Top Shelf.
Thanks for having me, Susie. Great to be here.
This is great. Right. Now, Chris, before Bluff Distillery became your world, what did life look like? Tell us about your career before gin and what eventually convinced you to swap a path for building a distillery at the very bottom of New Zealand.
Yeah, so I've had a few different career changes over the years, from electrical engineering through to tertiary education. And just before the distillery, I was full-time beekeeping. Wow. still have that business now. So it was just a chance meeting with some Southland food producers that gave us the opportunity to explore what this might look like, and the unique spot that we've got here. And that was really the catalyst to take it further, I guess.
Okay, so tell us about the very beginning and how, you know, obviously starting a distillery isn't exactly a career move from beekeeping per se. What was there a particular moment that you thought, right, let's do this? Or was it something that sort of evolved over time?
Yeah, it took a wee while. We talked about it for a while. I was actually on site visiting a pawa farmer. So we've got a pawa farm on land here, the only one in New Zealand. And I was having a look around that, and the owner said, oh, that would be a great place for some hospitality, and we should put a distillery or a brewery in there. And yeah, I'd done a bit of beer brewing in the past, and stuff like that, but no distilling. So we just sort of talked about it, and then we got about a year down the track and thought, well, let's have a go at it, see what happens. And my beer brewing equipment turned into distilling equipment, and we made some pretty ropey product.
So how long was it from the initial let's get the brewing equipment out to right, that's the recipe? How long was that process?
It was quite a while, really, because one of the hardest bits I guess is to focus on what your key strengths are and where you want, which direction you want to go. So we made a lot of different products. Gin wasn't the only thing we made. We made all sorts of products, but it came down to looking at what markets we could see in New Zealand and abroad in terms of scalability, making the figures stack up and all sorts of stuff. And that's why we ended up landing on London Dry.
Right. Okay. So I remember really clearly when you launched, this beautiful bottle suddenly arrived on the market, and almost immediately it seemed everyone was talking about it. Then not long afterwards, you went on to win Best in Show at the Australian Gin Awards. What was that whirlwind first year like from your perspective?
It was a nightmare in terms of logistics because we'd never really imported, exported, or done anything like that. So, and none of us were from the booze industry. So it was just a very steep learning curve. Just the biggest hassle was, getting bottle supply. You know, we came up with this design and we had to get them made. We couldn't get them here. When we got them here, they were sold out. How long to the next one, you know? Getting to 6 months and winning that award was pretty amazing.
Yeah,
really amazing.
Okay, so now the bottle is impossible to ignore. It's unlike anything else on the shelf. Can you tell us the story behind the design and why it was so important to capture a piece of Bluff's maritime history rather than just simply putting gin into a bottle?
Yeah, I guess from the outset we thought, how can we make this launch really have some traction? And you only get to launch a product really once, mm-hmm. and that's at the start. So we thought we contracted some marketing and branding companies, and they came down and came to site, froze to death some of them, so cold, and had a look around town. And then they put together their pitches to us to what they thought they could add to the piece of what we had. And so from there, we really focused on the glass fishing boys. That was the thing that really resonated with us all, because they were hanging in the yards and over the fences of places down the main street and houses and stuff like that. And so, we just naively said, okay, let's just make that. Absolute nightmare. 3 years it took us. We didn't go to China. It might have been a little bit quicker if we went to China and did it, but we didn't have the money to do that. So, but we got there in the end, and it's well worth the wait. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it is absolutely stunning. Now, one of the things that's always fascinated me is that you've only ever made one gin. In an industry where many distilleries are constantly releasing limited editions, flavoured gins and seasonal expressions, you've stayed completely focused on the London Dry. Why is that?
Yeah, it's probably the hardest thing to do. Distillers are very creative and they want to experiment and make new things and tweak stuff and do all that thing. But from previous experience in business, the more SKUs you have, the harder it is to control the supply and keep everything in stock and all that sort of thing. So, I guess we took a different approach. If you look at our bottle, there's no gaps on shelves for products in New Zealand. There's so many products out there. The great stuff made here and then stuff from overseas. So to put one product that's in a bottle our shape, it's going to take two products off the shelf to fit because it's so wide. So if we go and create more products, then we've got to we've got to earn that shelf space. And it just makes it so hard. There are a lot of brands out there in the world that have gone global with just one product. So there's no reason why a New Zealand brand can't do that. And that's why we only stick to one. It doesn't mean we don't play and we don't make stuff. It just never goes in a bottle and it never goes on the shelf.
Absolutely. Fair enough. So has there ever been any temptation to sort of branch out into anything else?
Oh, yeah, right at the start there was, yeah. We weren't even going to make gin. We were going to make rum back in 2020, 2019, 2020. And then we had other ideas of other products and bits and pieces. But, once we launched, we realised that this was really where we needed to sit. Stay within our lane, just doing one product. And we have bought out a new product in the last month.
What is it?
Same, but different. Just really small. So exactly the same gin, just in a 200ml bottle. Same shape and everything. So, even to do that took us a year from concept to having product on the shelves. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, congratulations. That's exciting. Right. Now, as we've discussed, your philosophy's always been about respecting the classic London Dry. For our listeners out there that don't know exactly what a London Dry style means, can you explain what that term is? And then tell us about the gin itself and the botanicals that you have chosen and what you're trying to achieve as far as flavour.
Yeah, totally. So I guess there's a couple of main rules for London Dry. The first one is it must be predominantly juniper. The alcohol must be distilled to 96% or higher before you start. So it basically tastes of nothing. So you can't have any character in the alcohol before you start. And then all the flavouring must be put into the gin during the distillation process. The only thing you can add after distillation is water or more alcohol. So there's lots of different ways you can put flavor into your gin and the still. You can put it in the vapor basket, you can put it in maceration, you can do all combinations of the two. We just stick to six simple ingredients: juniper, coriander. London Dry always has a fixative, so we use iris root rather than angelica root. Gives a really great mouthfeel as well. And then licorice gives a nice savory note to it. Can be overpowering, but if you use it really respectfully, it adds a great note to the gin. And then their last two ingredients are coriander, and then gives the dry gin, and then lemongrass and hibiscus flowers are the last two. So this adds a bit of a little bit of citrus and a little bit of a berry note as well. So just six simple ingredients. The one thing that is unique is that because we are 30 meters from Fovo Strait, all that salt air gets into everything, and it even adds this slight salinity to the gin while it's stored in the tanks and everything like that. So it's quite a cool thing that wasn't there when we created the recipe, 40 kilometers away on my kitchen bench, but it's there now.
I was going to ask that, because a lot of people do mention that it does have that subtle saline character that, of course, being so close to Fovo Strait, would obviously come through. Was creating a gin that generally captures that sense of place always part of the vision, though?
Yeah, totally. We wanted to, I guess, we didn't want to go into the contemporary space, just because the contemporary space was, at the time, was starting to get a little bit out of hand. It was a real competition to put something in there that no one else had put in there. And just because you found something doesn't mean you should put it in there, So I think, some people have done some great things with gins by just only using two or three ingredients, so you don't need to overcomplicate it. It's about getting it balanced. It's about getting it fit for purpose. And we've had some great gins at distilleries around the world. And that when you're there, you can taste it, but you can't replicate that when you take it away. So for us, it was about creating a gin that people could take away. They could pick it up duty free, take it to wherever, buy it overseas, and whenever they drank it, it reminded them of the place where they either came to bluff, or whether they, or it took them back, that sense of place. So it totally was what we were trying to achieve.
Absolutely. That sitting by the sea, sipping a gin and tonic.
Yeah, maybe not this week.
Not this week. It's a bit windy this week. Now, Chris, you've collected some incredible number of awards in a relatively short space of time, including some of the biggest honours in the gin world. But setting the trophies aside for a moment, what has been your proudest moment so far as a distiller?
I just think the way that it's been accepted around the world as a brand is pretty awesome. We bluffs the town of 1,600 people on a good day. To take a product made here take it to the UK and it wins product of the year, or you take it to San Francisco and it wins golds 2 years in a row. And these big competitions, you know, hundreds of gins from tens of, you know, 30 or 40 countries around the world. It's pretty crazy, really. So, yeah, pretty proud of what we've achieved in just over 2 years, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, your website says gin that does what it says on the tin. That's such a wonderfully refreshing attitude. As the brand grows and reaches more people around the world, how do you keep that authenticity and small town character in the heart of everything that you do?
Yeah, that's probably the hardest thing, you know. And I guess that's why we're lucky that we've got this that salinity in the gin. If you made it somewhere else, it's not made here. It doesn't taste the same. We won't be adding something into it to try and recreate that, you know. It's one of one. It can only be made here. So I guess that's the way that we keep it real. The fact we come to work every day and we're working in an old freezing works and it's still freezing, that's a bit of a reality check, you know. We're going for a high of 8 degrees today. I think it's probably about 4 in here at the moment. So, yeah, it's just, you know, you turn up on site, you look out at the ocean, and it just, yeah, keeps you grounded.
Absolutely. I could imagine, you know, even on a bad day, the ocean still
looks different. Totally.
Now, without giving away any trade secrets, what's next for Bluff Distillery? Is the focus still on taking this one exceptional gin even more places, or is there other ideas bubbling away in the background?
No, at the moment we're just focusing on the one product. We've got nothing else in the wings in terms of releasing another product. Once we've gone into a market and we've established ourselves there, rather than creating another product to try and get more of that market share, we just move on to the next market. So currently we're in Fiji, Japan, UK, and sometimes Australia. Wow. For those of our markets that are in the moment, we're just working on USA, Korea, and Switzerland at the moment as well. So we've got a few irons on the fire in terms of that. So it's just a matter of looking at other markets, and some of those places may not eventuate, but you know, we've got to give it a try.
Absolutely, you got it out there. And of course, there has been the release of your 200ml bottles, so it must be nice not to have a project going on in the background now.
Yeah. My projects are just a little bit further afield. That's all.
Yeah. That's all. Hopefully you get to travel there.
Yeah.
Now, Chris, imagine it's Friday afternoon. The working week is behind you. The emails can wait, and you've finally got a chance to have 5 minutes to yourself. Tell us some of the favourite ways that you like to enjoy Bluff Gin.
Well, I guess it depends how the week went as to what I'm going to be drinking. If the week wasn't very good, I'm probably going to be having a couple of martinis.
Right.
It won't have much vermouth in it. It'll be mostly gin. Right. Yeah, and a twist of lemon, or maybe a little bit dirty with a little bit of Bluff Oyster juice if it's in season. So it's not too bad. Sometimes a bit of a gilder with a bit of mutton bird on top as well. So
Now you're really showing off.
yeah. It's using what we've got on the back doorstep, but generally it's just a gin and tonic or a gin and soda. Easy to go to, super refreshing. But if it's been a tough week, it's martini time.
Yeah, when I first tasted your gin, that was the first thing that came to mind, was this is the absolute best gin to make a martini, because with the saline coming through, it is outstanding.
Yeah, you almost don't need to add anything to it. Just chill the gin down and pour it in a glass.
Absolutely. Absolutely, or just a block of ice and just sip away. It is incredibly smooth. Absolutely one of my favourite gins. Well, Chris, thank you so much for joining us on Tales from the Top Shelf. It's been fantastic hearing how a bold idea from New Zealand's southernmost town became one of the country's most awarded new spirits in a short space of time. From the remarkable story behind the iconic boy bottle to your commitment to producing one beautifully crafted London Dry gin, you've shown that sometimes doing one thing exceptional really well is just enough. So thank you for sharing your story and creating a gin that's proudly putting Bluff on the map.
Thanks for having me. Cheers.
Right, now if you'd like to experience Bluff Gin for yourself, or you're curious to see the bottle that's become one of New Zealand's most recognisable spirits, head to nzspiritguide.com to learn more. And if you've already tasted Bluff Gin, we'd love for you to leave a rating and review on NZ Spirit Guide to help others discover another outstanding New Zealand distillery. Until next time, remember, support local, buy direct, drink responsibly, and keep your top shelf full of stories.
That's a wrap on this episode of Tales from the Top Shelf. We hope you've enjoyed this peek into the craft and creativity behind New Zealand's distilling scene. As always, sip slow, enjoy responsibly, and don't forget to support our incredible local spirit makers. I'm Susie from NZ Top Shelf. Catch you next time for more Behind the Bar stories.
This program was produced at Coast Access Radio with the support of New Zealand On Air. Coast Access Radio.